The same goes for propositions about the world, about the cosmos, about morality, and about human nature. And very likely, when the child grows up and has children of her own, she will naturally pass the whole lot on to her own children, nonsense as well as sense, using the same infectious gravitas of manner. On this model, we should expect that in different geographical regions, different arbitrary beliefs, none of which have any factual basis, will be handed down to be believed with the same conviction as useful pieces of traditional wisdom, such as the belief that manure is good for the crops. We should also expect that superstitions and other non-factual beliefs will locally evolve, change over generations, either by random drift or by some sort of analogue of Darwinian selection, eventually showing a pattern of significant divergence from common ancestry. Languages drift apart from a common progenitor, given sufficient time in geographical separation. I shall return to this point in a moment. The same seems to be true of baseless and arbitrary beliefs and injunctions handed down the generations, beliefs that were perhaps given a fair wind by the useful programmability of the child brain. Religious leaders are well aware of the vulnerability of the child brain and the importance of getting the indoctrination in early. The Jesuit boast,
"Give me the child for his first 7 years and I'll give you the man,"
is no less accurate or sinister for being hackneyed. In more recent times, James Dobson, founder of today's infamous Focus on the Family movement, is equally acquainted with the principle.
"Those who control what young people are taught and what they experience, what they see, hear, think and believe, will determine the future course for the nation."
But remember, my specific suggestion about the useful gullibility of the child mind is only an example of the kind of thing that might be the analogue of moths navigating by the moon or the stars. The ethologist Robert Hind in Why Gods Persist and the anthropologists Pascal Boyer in Religion Explained and Scott Atran in Gods We Trust have independently promoted the general idea of religion as a byproduct of normal psychological dispositions. Many byproducts, I should say, for the anthropologists especially, are concerned to emphasize the diversity of the world's religions as well as what they have in common. The findings of anthropologists seem weird to us only because they are unfamiliar. All religious beliefs seem weird to those not brought up in them. Boyer did research on the Fang people of Cameroon, who believe
that witches have an extra internal, animal-like organ that flies away at night and ruins other people's crops or poisons their blood. It is also said that these witches sometimes assemble for huge banquets where they devour their victims and plan future attacks. Many will tell you that a friend of a friend actually saw witches flying over the village at night, sitting on a banana leaf and throwing magical darts at various unsuspecting victims.
Boyer continues with a personal anecdote.
"I was mentioning these and other exotica over dinner in a Cambridge college when one of our guests, a prominent Cambridge theologian, turned to me and said, 'That is what makes anthropology so fascinating and so difficult too. You have to explain how people can believe such nonsense.' Which left me dumbfounded. The conversation had moved on before I could find a pertinent response to do with kettles and pots."
Assuming that the Cambridge theologian was a mainstream Christian, he probably believed some combination of the following.
"In the time of the ancestors, a man was born to a virgin mother with no biological father being involved. The same fatherless man called out to a friend called Lazarus, who'd been dead long enough to stink, and Lazarus promptly came back to life. The fatherless man himself came alive after being dead and buried 3 days. 40 days later, the fatherless man went up to the top of a hill and then disappeared bodily into the sky. If you murmur thoughts privately in your head, the fatherless man and his father, who is also himself, will hear your thoughts and may act upon them. He is simultaneously able to hear the thoughts of everybody else in the world. If you do something bad or something good, the same fatherless man sees all, even if nobody else does. You may be rewarded or punished accordingly, including after your death. The fatherless man's virgin mother never died, but ascended bodily into heaven. Bread and wine, if blessed by a priest, who must have testicles, become the body and blood of the fatherless man.
What would an objective anthropologist coming fresh to this set of beliefs while on fieldwork in Cambridge